Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Chew the Fat. My name is Russell Alford.
And I'm Patrick Hanlon.
And this episode is due to go out today, the June the 11th, 2021. It's a podcast, but I have to give that date because we give time-sensitive information at the very beginning of the podcast. But of course, the content thereafter may not be time-sensitive. So if you're listening in the future, hello from your flying cars and whatnot. But fast forward a little bit and you can hear the great interviews that we have coming up. And this week, we do have some great interviews, don't we?
Yes, indeed. We have Brian Tracy of Bartender Collective, and he's going to tell us about a unique new Kickstarter campaign that his cooperative of bartenders has just launched. And we are also going to be chatting to the infectious, the energetic, the incomparable duo that is Sinead and Philippa from the Sea Hare in Cleggan.
So that's all still to come, but we're going to begin, as we do every single week, with the Chew the Fat notice board.
Cork's award-winning cocktail bar Cask has launched Casktails, a range of ready-to-pour bottled cocktails in 350 ml, €22 each, and 750 ml sizes, €44 each. The pre-mixed bottled cocktail offering will feature seasonal and foraged ingredients sourced locally from artisan food producers, such as the orchards at Ballymaloe House, Cork Rooftop Farm, and Carrigaline's Coolmore Bees, as well as involving Irish drinks bands like Wicklow Wines, Dingle Gin, and Beamish Stout. A bartender's choice bottle will evolve with the seasons and involve bartenders and bars from around the world. You can order yours for nationwide delivery via caskcork.com, and of course, always drink responsibly.
Taking place from June the 11th until June 20th, the Eat the Streets Festival is all about connection to food through 10 days of activities, events, talks, cycles and walks. A series of cook-alongs will feature Dublin-based chefs such as Connor Spacey of Food Space Ireland, Owen Meldon of Little Bird, Katie Quinn of Lilliput, with Syrian chef Muhannad Jazmati and Dan Keane of Stack A at Urban Brewing. A series of after-dinner chats featuring a lineup of incredible food authors, educators, academics, and so many more will share ideas and discuss the future of food. For more information on this and the scope of activities taking place, you can visit eatthestreets.ie.
Now, cheese boards are a perfect centrepiece for any occasion, and Boardbia want to see your cheese board creations. To be in with a chance of winning an Irish Farmhouse cheese hamper, you just need to build a show-stopping cheese board using Irish Farmhouse cheese brands. Upload it to Instagram, tagging at Boardbia and hashtag buildmyboard. This competition is going to run for the next few weeks, and if you need any further information or cheese inspiration, you can click onto boardbia.ie/farmhouse-cheese.
I may need to enter that one myself. If you have any news information from the world of food and you would like it featured in the Chew the Fat notice board next week, still TBC if it's going to be called Chew the Fat Nuggets or not, we'll see. You can email us at hiya@gastrogaze.com, or you can contact us through social media. We are at Gastrogaze across all of them, or we have an Instagram page for Chew the Fat, which is at Chew the Fat Podcast, and you can message us there too. But email is always better. If you can get that to us by next Thursday or any Thursday afternoon before the evening, we can include it in that week's podcast. I really want to win that cheese. No, I do. I really do. It's a great competition.
Everybody does. Who could say no to a hamper of gorgeous Irish farmhouse cheeses? I absolutely can never resist. As we do every episode, we kind of intersperse the notice board and the interviews with
Some thoughts
and some discussion and some casuality between ourselves.
I guess we've kind of touched on the thing of an outdoor summer, and maybe this could be the diary of an outdoor summer, but it is very much the talking point of the nation, especially in hospitality and food and drink in particular. And in the week that is in it, we have had the resumption of outdoor pints, outdoor dining.
Actually, still haven't had an outdoor pint.
We were going to go We were going to go yesterday, a very, very busy day. And it was our intention to go down into the town of Drogheda and have just one. Just, that's all I wanted, was just one.
Although probably a second and a third.
Yeah, and yeah, maybe, but one for sure. And it was with best intentions. And the day was glorious. I actually kind of, even it was so glorious, my neck is a little red because I did not expect it to be as warm as it was. And then, as we were driving home, about to go out, it started raining. And
that, torrential.
Like, torrential rain. So that put a stop to any ideas that we had, and that was the end of that. But, of course, all across the country, especially on Monday, and it was so lovely to see the beer gardens, the terraces, the streets, just full of people happy and celebrating being together and socialising and everything like that. And I think we'll see lots more of that. And I guess everyone has been saying for years that even pre-COVID or whatever, it's nice to have outdoor space because it is nice being outdoors when it's nice out.
Especially as it coincided with a bout of great weather.
Except for last night.
Well, except for, I mean, it is Ireland, so there's always a caveat, there's always an asterisk that if it's good weather, you know, also prepare for it could be rainy, it could be windy, but it'll still be just nice out. And so that got us thinking about kind of the summer of staycations.
Number two.
Exactly. That's kind of an evolution of everything that we started last year. I think on the whole, everyone kind of embraced the Irish staycation because they kind of hadn't any other choice, but even at that.
And I guess the other thing about a staycation as opposed to I'm saying that and I can already hear a couple of people, including you, nameless person, complaining about the use of the word staycation. Look, don't make the rules.
I could say vacation instead if you like.
Vacation.
So, I mean, the choice is yours.
Gastro vacation.
Staycation or vacation. And like, ultimately, let's not get bogged down about the wording.
We know what it means.
Yeah.
We know what it means. We know that it originally means that you're sitting at home and taking annual leave and just pottering about the gaff. I get that. But this is marketing. And someone needs to come along in the thing going, instead of saying, stay at home, but not like at home. Like, go.
I've had enough of that already.
Go around the country. It just works, okay?
And
especially
totally
with hashtag summer staycations, it does work. On that topic, though, obviously, a reason why it is such a popular option is A, because at this moment in time, we aren't permitted to travel internationally for non-essential reasons. So there is that element of certainty with regards traveling around the country. Intercounty travel came along in May.
Start of May, wasn't it? 8th of May.
Was it, yeah?
8th of May or something along those lines.
Yeah.
It got announced in April anyway.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and it was 20K before that. God, it feels like a lifetime ago. But back in April, the Irish Hotels Federation produced a survey, and it surveyed 330 properties, which represented over 30,000 rooms, with their projections for July, August, and September. And it's quite interesting because we kind of seen some of these trends last summer as well. There is strong demand in coastal areas, naturally. We love the sea. And already popular popular tourism destinations are also very popular, such as the sunny southeast, followed by southwest Cork and Kerry, border counties, including the coastal areas of like Donegal, Sligo, and the west in July and August. But then it's September, it begins to become a bit more of an even playing field. But one of the issues is Dublin.
Yeah, it has come out in that survey across the board as almost every month being the lowest occupancy at its height. I think it had been 18% in July or something akin to that. So across all of them, it hadn't even gotten to that 20% mark. So I think it demonstrates, you know, a trend that is not uncommon, that of course people in the cities who've spent a year particularly in their own individual homes in a built up city, of course they're going to want to go farther flung to the complete extreme opposite area of the country.
And when you think of it, Dublin's population is a significant majority, or at least a significant percentage of the Irish population as well. So of course it's going to be skewed. And of course it's a city that, you know, only X amount of people were born there. And there's people from all across the country and all across the world who live and call the city home as well. So naturally people will gravitate maybe towards their Galways, their Donegals and so on and so forth, just to see family, never mind having a holiday. It's quite interesting though. We are embarking on a little break ourselves for the next couple of days, and we're staying up in Dublin tomorrow evening, and very much looking forward to that. But looking around for the next couple of weeks and months ourselves, because we don't live in Dublin, so actually having a little holiday in Dublin to us is such a joy. We did it last summer. We had 3 nights up in Dublin, and it felt like we were, it could have been in New York, could have been in London. Like, it just was lovely for us because we were so far away from it. We're 40 minutes down the road from it, but it felt like a long way away during all the lockdowns. And there is good value around if you look for it. And it just depends on what you're after. And it, I guess the city, it's been long said that Dublin doesn't really function as a functioning city per se in a lot of ways. But it is worth looking out for these things. And maybe constantly, we always kind of say this to people when we would do a lot of travel writing. Look off the beaten track. Mm-hmm. Look in different places. Everyone's going to Kerry. You know, Kerry's great, by the way. Not dissing Kerry, but you know, I love it. But like, if it's like over the top and the prices are a bit ridiculous, well, you missed the boat a little bit, maybe, you know?
Yeah, and I think it brings up the idea that staycations, or it enforces the idea that staycations are not only just, you know, far-flung coastal counties exploring a place that's new. You can still have a staycation in a city and explore it under fresh eyes, or changing up the itinerary, or curating it in a way that ordinarily you probably wouldn't.
Like, we enjoy Belfast as a destination quite a lot. We'd visit there quite often. And then for us, like, we'd go to Galway quite a bit, but we'd do Galway and maybe Galway County separately in that kind of way if we're out in that part of the world. I don't know what it is, whether it's just the fact that a lot of things are very Dublin-centric in terms of reporting. So it's like, oh, well, it's very quiet in the city. And it's like, we're talking to people in our industry over the last couple of days in particular. And they've said things like, oh, I wouldn't want to be open in Dublin like August, September type of time, or even July and August, because it's so quiet. Mm. Naturally, it always is. People were complaining about it last summer, saying, oh my God, town is dead. And people who are very long in the tooth and experienced were going, it's always dead.
Every year.
Like, always dead. Like, one of the best weekends to be in Dublin, I think, is like the August bank holiday weekend, especially when there's festivals on, because half the place is empty. And if you want a bit of P&Q, it's fantastic, you know? So
the other issue about hospitality opening up also brings up the issue of staff, because we, I guess, all hadn't quite hoped to be back into another lockdown and only coming out of it as the summer starts. But there's been hotels, guest houses, etc., etc., who have been closed possibly for the guts of the past year. And their staff have had to be furloughed or let go, or their staff have chosen to go, if they're international, back to their home countries, or they've gone to other countries.
Gone to other industries as well.
Other industries that'll offer them kind of structure, that will offer them kind of comfort in that I can get to go into work every day. So it has thrown up a real issue in terms of skilled staff.
And
I think,
I don't even think that's limited just to hotels and guest houses. It's the restaurant industry, the cafe industry, bakers, chefs, the whole shebang. Like, I think it doesn't go a day that we don't see we're hiring. So it's a scary, scary time. It's maybe something we can explore in a couple of weeks' time, actually, about the idea of food education, training, skills, and why there is this lack going on right now. But it's an interesting point. But the moral of the story is, enjoy your summer, have a nice time, and do consider the cities, because we got ridiculously good prices on hotels up in Dublin over the next couple of months. So maybe have a little look and book into a nice restaurant, have a nice evening, go for a few drinks, and explore a place that maybe you haven't in a while. I think there's, I think you kind of take it for granted, especially if you're in these places quite a lot, that you don't look up and look around and see what's actually around you. But speaking of going around and enjoying hotels and bars and drinks and everything like that, I think it's time to move on to our first interview. And we're actually going to be delving into the idea of democratizing the bartender industry with a new business that has come up called the Bartender Collective. It's a cooperative of keen and talented bartenders from Ireland who have come together to create their very own spirits company. First producing a gin called Trade Secrets, which actually scooped the best Irish gin at the World Gin Awards 2020. They have now set their sights on growth and adding more spirits to their lineup, provided that they are successful with quite an ambitious Kickstarter campaign.
And we are now joined by Brian Treacy, the founder of the collective. Brian, hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Thank you so much for giving us your time today, just as everything opens up and all of us are heading out and having our al fresco drinks. So really, really appreciate you jumping on. Tell us about your exciting Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah, so we've just launched it. We were a couple of days further back than we were hoping. It was some technical difficulties at the start, just on the basis that it's an alcohol related campaign. So obviously there's a little bit more reviewing and checking everything on Kickstarter side, but all good. And yeah, we got up and running. We're off to a decent start with a few people backing it. And essentially what we're looking is to raise money for further projects with the Bartender Collective. So we've brought together a bunch of bartenders from all over Ireland, but I mean, given the nature of hospitality, it's obviously people from all over the world as well. And the connections are all there throughout different countries already. So we wanted to bring people together to sort of create something that was, you know, would give back to those working in hospitality. And you know, the first thing we wanted to do was to sort of create a tangible product, like our own spirits, because I think the original concept was that we would just sort of create the network and there would be a value within that. And it was sort of, we would learn from each other, we'd work together, but it needed to be something more. And we realized the value, obviously, within the spirits industry that bartenders add to it. And they don't get anything in return, essentially, back from building these brands over the years. So they often are the make or break people behind brands. And I think, from my own background working with brands over years, it's the thing that everyone knows is you have to get bartenders on side and in the early stages. And ultimately, a lot of brands don't really give back an awful lot to them. So we wanted to start from the opposite perspective with the bartenders first, and then they're the ones who create the products, can go through the whole system. And then we decided to go with gin in the early stages. And now with our Kickstarter project, we're looking to get some more money together for our next projects. We're looking at rum. We're looking at a tequila or mezcal, potentially from Mexico, and getting it shipped across, getting it made over there with a distillery. And then I think in the long term, ultimately, we'd love to produce our own whiskey as well. You know, when it comes to Ireland, like Irish whiskey is what we do really well. And, you know, gin is also a great product. That's why we went with that in the early stages, something that we felt we could do really well. But yeah, whiskey would be definitely the ultimate goal in terms of producing. So yeah, we just needed that. We needed that little bit of a boost in terms of cash flow. All of it is, we're 100% funded by the bartenders and internally. So there's no external cash has come into it. There's no big money behind us to give us that push. And we're starting to see the return from the sales that have gone through so far. So there's a small bit of cash flow, but it probably won't come through really until later in the year. And that would sort of slow down the whole process of creating new products. So we just wanted to get a kickstart with it. And that's why we went to it. We wanted to try and get some money injected in. And with, you know, producing those products, you have to pay up front typically. So, you know, we needed to get that in. And that's kind of what led to this whole idea. And then I did like it. I liked the idea of putting it out there, I suppose, and seeing what the community thought of it as well, and how they would respond to this idea that we've had of bringing bartenders together to create better value for them.
And so kind of let's think of it from a very outside perspective here. Let's say you're explaining to someone the industry and how bartenders have to operate. Is it a case that, hello, I am Big Gin Brand and I've come to your business and I'm insisting that you use my gin. Is that pretty much how it kind of works?
That often is the case. I mean, across the bar, there's, you know, different deals for every product essentially in there. For the big ones anyway, the pouring gin, the pouring vodka, the pouring whiskey. And then on the taps, obviously for the beers, you can see there's a very consistent type of beer across every bar. That's because the deals are in place from the big players. Yeah, that's typically what it is. And we've kind of gone outside of that. We knew we couldn't compete with that, and we didn't really want to either. So we're not going to be going near, I suppose, more the pouring gin or vodka or rum or whatever we try and create. We're going for the top level, the higher value, top shelf kind of products is what we're trying to achieve. And that's, I suppose, what led us to work with Bonnac Distillery, who we worked with for our first gin as well. They have a really, really incredible setup there, and their own gin is very, very good as well. It's incredible gin. So we knew that we were in good hands. And then working with Gavin there, he was excellent for, you know, giving us some advice and sort of getting us to the point where we could achieve the gin that we were very happy with putting on the market.
So the gin is called Trade Secrets. Is it entirely aimed at trade, or is it also aimed at consumer as well?
No, it's ultimately made to be, you know, to be shared with people and to be sold in the market. Initially, we were only going to sell it through bars. So the idea was we were just going to have it in bars. It was going to kind of be a trade secret, that it would just be this product that was only available in bars, and that your local bartender would know about it. And if you went into the best cocktail bars in town, that's what they would serve. But ultimately, like the bars being pushed back further and further meant that we couldn't wait forever to just, you know, put it out there. So we started selling online, and then we started selling through some select retailers around as well. Through just people, Sweeney's particularly, D7, that were the first people to do it. And then we had Celtic Whiskey as well, who came on board very early. So yeah, we were very lucky with the people who supported us, and that's continued since then now as well. We've got some distributors on board since the award, and some new retailers over the past few weeks as well.
Now, hold on there for a second, because that award you just spoke about is pretty prestigious. Can you talk us through it?
Yeah, it was a big shock. It was so essentially when we were doing our trials and our tasting for the gin, we were very happy with how it was turning out. And we got to the point where the last tasting session that we had eight bartenders, and out of the eight people that were there, we did a fully blind tasting session, so no bias towards our own products or anything. And there was six people chose ours and as first place against head to head with all of the kind of top gins that we had selected to taste against, and two had picked in second. So we were very happy with the results that we were finding in our taste testing, and we felt it was as good as anything in the world. So we decided that we'd put it up there and put it against everything. So It was the first three bottles that came off the line. Essentially, we packed them up with temporary labels, and we stuck them on and sent them across. And they weren't finalized labels or anything. We did a lot of editing afterwards and changes, but they were good enough to go over and be a real product. So we sent them to the World Gin Awards just to sort of see, you know, how we would fare against all the other gins that were up there. And then the way it works out this year, obviously there was no big award ceremony. Normally you would get invited over to London for the big award ceremony if you're in the running, even, you know, if you're nominated or anything for it. But there was nothing like that this year. So I was just watching on my laptop, like I'm sitting here now, watching the results and the award ceremony going on live on Facebook. It was happening at the time. And then it came up with the country award winners for London Dry Gin, and we're the best London Dry Gin in Ireland. And it was, you know, out of all of the ones that were selected. So we won a gold medal, and then out of ourselves and Dingle, who Dingle also received a gold medal. So there was two of that standard in Ireland, which is, you know, it's great that that's the level that we're at here in Ireland. We have two gold medalists, and then we were lucky enough to get the selection of the country winner. So it was Yeah, it was just amazing to see it like that. We were, yeah, it was in shock because I'm waiting then to see that. I was refreshing the website every 5 seconds to make sure it was real and that it was on there, because they hadn't put it up then for a few minutes after the ceremony. So yeah, before I shared it around with everyone, making sure it's definitely real. This is happening.
Essential. An incredible achievement and a really strong start for a brand new product to the market. Can you talk us through the flavor of Trade Secrets Gin?
Yeah, so what we tried to achieve with it was a very, you know, your classic London dry gin style. And when we were initially planning it with the bartenders, we decided, you know, there's a lot of gins have gone very, very citrus heavy, or, you know, or else they've put in some botanical to really stand out, you know, because they're trying to make something that is different from the rest, and they're trying to go crazier and wilder. And, you know, what we wanted to achieve though was different. We wanted a bartender's gin, something that they would be very proud to serve in their bars and that they would love to work with in cocktails, particularly to make a really good martini, was what we were very keen on. And I think that's kind of the classic that has to work in. So we went sort of back to classic gin, classic London dry gin anyway, which is, you know, big juniper heavy. And that's something that often a lot of new gins do pull back the juniper to try and make it more accessible for people and a bit like less like gin and more like just a flavored spirit sort of. But the juniper is key to London dry, and we went big on it. And then, you know, coriander was another major component for it as well. But we did, you know, we wanted to balance between the sort of citrus and the more perfumey kind of flavors as well in it. So there's lemon, there's bitter orange peel, there's grapefruit. And that's where, so in terms of the pairing or the, you know, for what do you serve it with? We typically say a slice of orange or grapefruit works really well. It kind of brings those through. But it does on the nose, really nice citrusy, really refreshing smell. And then the mouthfeel is very soft, creamy. It's, from the wheat that's used from the distillate at Bonnac. And then, just nice, soft, not overly burny or boozy. We said at 40%, which again is kind of the classic kind of for London dry. We didn't need to go bigger than that. And we definitely didn't want to go lower. Again, you can go lower and make it a little bit weaker and more accessible at a lower alcohol, and also it's cheaper to produce because the duty is lower. Yeah. But it doesn't, you know, we didn't factor in any of those things. We just wanted it to be the best product we could make without any sort of thought about costs. And then and we were very happy with it. That's how it kind of came through. And the rest that's in there, just kind of a few other, there's cassia, jasmine, orris, sort of classic things that are sometimes in gin, and then just trying to balance all of those together so that they worked. And yeah, I think it came together pretty well.
It's great that at no stage you compromised, because of the idea of if we're going to be putting our names to it, if we're going to be doing this as a collective, it has to work and have a good standing towards it. We're very aware ourselves as how should I say politely, regular enjoyers of a gin from day to day, hour to hour. The gin industry in Ireland had obviously a huge spike at one point. Mm. And I think for the past 4 years, I've heard the expression, oh, we're over gin. Oh, get over gin. But it hasn't. There's still a demand, isn't there?
Yeah, there's still a big appetite for it. And in the early stages of our thought process of what we were going to make as our first product, gin was probably lower on my list than a lot of others. But, you know, ultimately, as we have with the whole way through this process, it's the group and what the bartenders as a group want, we fall back to. And ultimately, you know, a lot of the bartenders were still of the opinion that what we could do with gin, first of all, there's a lot of good gin distilleries in Ireland, so we could work with one that would produce hopefully a world-class product. And then, you know, as opposed to making something that it'd be more of a reach here, you know, we're hoping to make rum soon, but obviously it's going to be a difficult venture as well. It's not something that people are very experienced with in Ireland. And there's some really nice producers are making stuff now, but it's not as wide ranging. Whereas the gin, our bartenders were very confident in their knowledge and their experience of gin over the past, you know, 10 years or so. They've basically tried every gin on the market, you know, within their time. So that's where we lent towards. And there is still an appetite for it, and they felt that if they had it in their hands in the bar, they could tell people about it, and people would want to try it, and that we could, you know, put it in front of people and they could tell for themselves the difference in the quality of it. So that's where we kind of went towards gin again. But I don't think it has dropped potentially a small bit, but there's still people love it and love the exploration of different different flavors and pairings and everything as well. People are just still fascinated by gin, I think.
Especially now that they can actually have a gin outside of the home
at long last.
Exactly. In terms of the Kickstarter, your aim is 10,000 euros, isn't that correct?
We didn't want to set it to be too, I suppose, outlandish or too high. 10,000 is kind of the ballpark figure for, you know, producing a batch of spirits realistically that we would need, and hopefully, you know, covering a few other costs of things as well. We have said in that, you know, we would love to go further with it if people can possibly go past it. The way that Kickstarter works is you have to hit the 10,000 or you don't get any of it. So we have to achieve that first of all, and that's the main aim. But yeah, basically whatever we go above that will just ultimately be used for either creating a larger batch for the next product or a larger batch for the second batch of gin, which we're going to have to do fairly soon to keep up with things. And then trying to go into other new products and things. Every day, one or two of the bartenders come to me with another idea that they want to produce, vermouth, or we're discussing with producer in Italy and in France for vermouth as well, which we'd love to pursue. But again, it's just having the cash to play around with for those things and be able to say to a producer, let's start that process, let's discuss with you, and then we can actually, you know, put the money down and start paying for a batch to be produced for us.
And the Bartender Collective is not intended just to be this island, really. Isn't that right? You want it to expand beyond the borders here.
Yeah, well, like, bartending is one of the, I suppose, really true international, like, borderless jobs. You know, you can kind of take a bartender from one side of the world and transport them to the other side, and you could swap over and they could figure it out pretty quickly. I mean, it is a universal kind of language in that industry. And it's one of the best things about it. You know, when people go to another country, they often find that they work in a bar for a while, and then sometimes it becomes their career. And it's, you know, that's, we want to try and bring the kind of global bartender community together, which is already the case. It's a really strong community already, and on Instagram and on various platforms, you know, there's great interaction from people on all corners of the globe. But we want to try and bring them together for this, to kind of create the company for them as well and bring them in. So as part of our the company setup, the way we've structured it, because we've built it from scratch, so we're trying to do really, I suppose, and be as ambitious as possible and create something that will make a big difference. We want to bring people in and they have an opportunity to earn into the company, become an equity member as well of the company, which would mean they would own a part of it. So I suppose we've all seen, you know, the valuation of spirits brands and of big drinks companies, and they all have to start somewhere, and then we want to try and get to that point at some point in the future, but you have to start with from a small basis, and then as we grow, we'll expand out the network further and bring in more and more people in to be part owners of the company. So with that, then there's just some real value that they can create for themselves and, you know, earn for themselves over the years. And it just makes it, I suppose, a nicer industry to be involved in, because it had become a very difficult one in some ways to be involved in. And I think we've seen then during obviously the last year, a lot of people did have to move away from it just because it was closed for so long, or they decided to pursue other interests or try and find work elsewhere. But it's a tough one to make a career out of now. You know, it's in some ways, a lot of people kind of became a bit more commoditized with some bartenders but a good bartender makes or breaks, you know, the bar essentially. And we want to kind of make sure that there is a place for that career to stay there, that if it's your passion and that's your lifestyle, it is that, you know, you can earn enough from it, and that this can potentially give you the impetus to kind of continue doing it. So
speaking of bars and of the past 18 months or thereabouts, you're also at Trouble Brewing, craft beers, fantastic products. How has COVID changed, impacted the world of craft beers?
Oh, dramatic. Like, so we've had a crazy year with Trouble, year and a half, I suppose. So before COVID trouble, we would have been about 90% draft beer. So we were really just kegs, primarily just sending, you know, delivering kegs around the country, mostly around the Dublin area, but then Galway and Cork as well, and some in various parts of the country as well. But it was almost all draft, and our packaging was mostly outsourced as well. So we didn't have our own canning line or bottling line. So as of 2 months ago, we have our own canning line, which was a major project for us. It's a big undertaking and a huge investment for, you know, for the future, I suppose. But coming off the back of the year, we could see, I suppose, the longer term plan of ourselves canning was that a lot of our customers really wanted cans. We just always had to make that decision between kegging or canning, and we didn't have the capacity to do both essentially to the same degree. So we used to supply their kegs for the bars first and foremost, and then kind of every so often we would can. But then this past year, obviously, everything went into cans, and all of our special releases and stuff had to go into cans as well. And it was just just great feedback, and kind of really, like, it was great. It was amazing to see just the responses and the messages we got from people who were drinking the cans of all the one-off beers. Because usually they would just go into bars, into some of the better craft beer bars, and you couldn't buy them in a shop. But, you know, we sort of discovered something about our business as well, was that Trouble has been around for 11 years. So it was 10 years old last year. We actually missed our big party celebration for 10 years. But it, you know, in that time, there would have been people at the start, or even 5 years ago, who would have been more than happy to turn up for, you know, a beer release night in one of the craft bars and have a great time and try it on draft. But maybe their circumstances have changed and they're not going into town as much, or they just want to be able to pick up some of the new release stuff at home, or as we've seen, like, get it home delivered as well, which is great. Some of the people doing that now, it's like the service is phenomenal from some of the home delivery places too. So yeah, we want to continue that. So that's why we got the canning line, was to be able to split, you know, batches as well between some of the specialty stuff, to put it a few kegs out there in the market, but also to can some of it as well, and then let people enjoy it if they want to pick it up from one of the online retailers or one of the bricks and mortar off licenses. So we decided in the early stage not to go down the road of directly selling to customers. That was one of the big things we picked out in the early stages. It was, we wanted to support the off licenses who've supported us for 10 years and more, like, you know. So we deliberately didn't do that. We've just set up the website to sell the t-shirts and the glasses and that kind of stuff on there now, but yeah, we've had great support from the off license over the past year, and the way they've sold our beer has been like, it's people are getting fresh beer, you know, 2 days old, 3 days old in some cases. Amazing. It just goes into the shop and directly out of the shop, and it's sold out in a week. You know, especially with some of the ones that are kind of more, the Fresh Prince of Kildare and those ones that come out, like, it just disappears so fast. So it's great to see. And then, yeah, the pictures on Instagram and stuff, it's kind of gives everyone a big boost.
Yeah, I think COVID has definitely thrown a spanner in the works across entire industries, but at the same time, it's also been kind of a cauldron of creativity, and it's sparked opportunities here and there too. And it's so interesting that you call this a collective, as I think the past year and a half has really shown that collective community spirit has had a proper stoke and has brought everyone together. That slight bit more. In saying that, how can all of our audience support the collective, and how can they find you going forward?
You're absolutely right. Like, it's the group sort of thing has been key to everything we've done, and, like, you know, bringing these people together who kind of work, even though they kind of are all interconnected, they all work individually in their own bars. And that's where the value coming together is, just all together. There's this huge amount of experience and expertise in what they do, you know, the value that they control in there. So that's where it comes from. But yeah, in terms of support, like the Kickstarter, we're hoping that people will support that. We've got some really nice rewards on there. There's obviously from the smaller stuff, like the badges and the bags are sort of some of the smaller things. And then right up to, there's some online classes with Gino, who is the bartender instructor, who does a lot of training for various bartenders all around the country, and he worked in, you know, the European Bar School and Dublin Bar Academy for a long time. So Yeah, they'll be fun, some of those online classes we're going to do. And then it goes right up to creating your own gin as well. That's the top, ooh, top level one. That there's a, we're going to run a whole batch of gin and bring, you know, all of our bartenders together, and we'll have some tasting sessions and run some sort of see what flavor profiles people like and don't like. And then we'll go right through that process and producing a brand new product for somebody and having a whole batch of it produced. So it's about 12 cases of it. A dozen cases made for somebody for that one, which is pretty good. I think it works out around 50 euros or I think it's under 50 euros a bottle in the end. So that's pretty much, you're getting your whole thing. Yeah. And then other than that, I suppose it's just as the bars reopen, you know, to support your bartenders in any way possible, even if it's not buying our stuff, but just in general, you know, tipping bartenders and being good to people. The fundamental goal of our company is to add value to bartenders. So that's what we try and do. The product is kind of the one side of it, that we want to put the product in their hands that they can sell, make a commission from, and then ultimately that they can become part owners of the company too. So our website, thebartendercollective.com, we sell the gin directly from there as well. But it's available, yeah, Celtic Whiskey, Sweeney's, D3. There's a lot of the independent off licenses now are carrying it actually, but and Malloy's have it available on their website as well, which has been a great addition recently. So yeah, just those are the things that we'll just keep the sales going through, I suppose, as people become more and more aware of it. Particularly if you're into gin and trying new ones and you want to try something, making some martinis at home, you can. There's a couple of the packs that do have include a lot of stuff as well. So on our website, thebartendercollective.com/Kickstarter, there's some of the details of, I suppose, some of the collections that we've put together for the Kickstarter, which would basically make you'd be fully set up for your bar and all the training and everything at home.
Oh, I don't know about you, but I need a martini now after talking about this. So get that cracked open there, and you can now go out into the sunshine of Ireland in June and enjoy a pint for yourself, a very well-deserved pint. Brian Tracy, the founder of the Bartender Collective, thank you for joining us on Chew the Fat.
Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate it.
Now, after talking about staycations, we have to move on to a place that many, many people flock to during 2020 and some in the summer of 2020, and of course are planning to do so this year as well. We're talking about Connemara, Cleggan. And we actually went to Cleggan for a bit of a day trip on a long drive when we're out the west coast, along the rugged west coast of Ireland, and there's so many gems around there, but we made a beeline for one in particular called the Sea Hare. It's firmly putting the port of Cleggan on the map for its food credentials, the pop-up dining concept from an enterprising pair of women, Sinead Foyle and Philippa Duff. It's all about championing simple seasonal flavours and cooking the landed catch each day.
Delicious. The pandemic has thrown a curveball their way, but the pair took that and turned it into a bit of a slam dunk, producing their incredibly delicious Sea Hare tamarind sauce. We are delighted to be joined by Sinead and Philippa now to hear more about how they started and what they have in store for the rest of the summer. You're very welcome, both.
Hi guys.
How are you?
Hello. So delighted to be talking to both of you today. It is a gloriously grey day here in the east of the country. Is it any better out west?
Sunny. The sun is splitting the stones.
Oh,
yeah, as always.
Well, always. Thank you for coming on Chew the Fat. Bye-bye now.
Always the case in Connemara. It's always absolutely tropical.
Yes, always.
So,
don't tell anybody.
We won't tell a soul. And while we're not telling anyone about Cleggan and Galway and the beautiful west coast of Ireland, we are going to tell a lot of people about the Sea Hare. But I think the two of you are probably best placed to do that. So if you'd like to explain to the unknown, I guess, what is the Sea Hare?
The Sea Hare it's a mix of many things. It started off as an idea for a food truck 2 years ago. Which never happened. So Plan B ended up being a cafe in a pub that was not open during the day. And so we kind of ran a business during the day, and the pub became the pub itself in the evenings. And it's based on, I suppose our ethos is local food, a simple menu, local fish, and as Sinead says, cakes, lots and lots of cakes.
Oh yeah, cake. Show me the cake.
And I can attest that the cakes are absolutely sensational.
Yes.
Oh, what did you have?
That is putting us on the spot. I think I had some kind of a carrot cake.
No, it was carrot cake. It was definitely carrot cake. And it was actually at your insistence that
I think
had the
it could have been. Well,
it was probably at my insistence because there's nothing else left. and you get what you get and you don't get upset.
I actually feel like I'm back there now. I actually think it was a case of what's for dessert? There's carrot cake and nothing.
Ginger cake. Carrot cake, and it's fabulous, and that's what you're getting. Yes. That's probably more like it. Yes.
So, in a way, you were, you know, ahead of the curve with the idea for a food truck, because it's very much the trend du jour, although it's mostly in horse boxes at the moment. The evolution from that to that, give us an idea of timelines and how you came together to create this project.
Oh no, Philippa.
Oh, here. Ah. Okay, all right. Well, it was my idea initially, the food truck. I thought it'd be a great idea. Cleggan, and where both of us live, is such a beautiful area, and I kind of felt that we wanted it needed something to, you know, bring people along and show what a wonderful place it was. And I thought the easiest way or the quickest way to get people in would be to set up a food truck. And for whatever reason, that didn't work out. I couldn't find a spot to put that I'd be allowed to put it on. And I had approached Sinead. Sinead was
minding my own business.
She was minding her own business
somewhere else.
She was a friend of mine, but we had never worked together. And I just approached her and I said, "Well, what do you think of this idea?" And then the food truck actually didn't work out, and Sinead came up with the idea of, why don't we go into one of the pubs that are in Cleggan that are not open during the day. And ask them if they'd be interested in, you know, having us in there as a business. And so it went from there.
Amazing, and a great idea. Had it kind of drawn an audience instantly, or had it a slow start?
It drew an audience fast enough not because of the cafe, but because of the long table dinners. So we were doing, this is obviously pre-COVID, we were doing the seafood dinners.
Seafood, long table seafood suppers once a week.
And you didn't get a choice. You just got whatever the fresh catch was on the day. And it was as simple as, we wouldn't know on the morning what we were cooking that evening, because we wouldn't know what the local fishermen were getting. So there was one or two days at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we still had no idea what the mains were. I was setting up the tables, but we had no idea what was going to happen next. Now, Philip is great in the kitchen, so she had the bones of it. But, you know, we're waiting for the phone call and your man is saying, we've only got, you know, 10 mackerel or 20 mackerel. And it's like, keep fishing until you get the lot and bring them in and all of that and gut them while you're on your way in. So there were days where you're just, you know, you're holding on to your life. But the
nice thing about a long table dinner, it's family style. So you have this eclectic mix of people. Sinead is a master of putting people together, and it's one big long table. And so instead of, you know, having, you know, tables of two very close together and no one talks to each other, having one big long table creates all these opportunities for meeting other people, and the sharing of the veg in the middle of the table. And it worked out really well,
and it was great fun. Yeah, it did put us on the map. The cafe itself was a little slower until last year, so that was the first season we were in
business. Well, Katie McGuinness wrote about our long table dinners in 2019, And thanks to Katie,
she gave I think,
I think, you know, we've kind of been just going from strength to strength.
And then with COVID last year, the concept changed a little bit because we couldn't do the long table. So we just
couldn't think
of something other than, you know, how to change the names. We just went short tables. So you soon get fresh.
Genius.
Yeah, I know. It's very simple. I'm very simple mind. So now you sit down, you still get whatever fish we can catch or whatever catch we can get on the day from the area. And they happen on a Thursday. Now, it didn't happen until the end of July last year. And we only did 5 of them because the way COVID fell and everything. And but the cafe got legs last year, and the outdoor dining, because we moved location where we are now again this year.
We're in the Pier Bar this year, which sits right on the pier.
Stunning.
And it's a great location. Yeah. Lovely.
Looking down the bay. And it's a working, you know, Cleggan is a working harbour. It's not like Ramsden, which is beautiful and idyllic and all of that. This is, you know, there are working fishermen. There's, you know, crab coming in, lobster coming in. There's, you know, the pier
the ferry
is
going ferry.
You know, there's a lot of life, a lot of action on it. So it doesn't, the views are beautiful from it, but, you know, you are watching a working live pier with a small community that are, you know, scraping out a living from it. So that's lovely to see.
And it is such a great experience to be able to see that where your food is coming from, how fresh it is. And it's also just idyllic because when it comes to outdoor dining, which is very much the topic of conversation at this moment in time, you kind of want something nice to look at because, you know, I guess if you're sitting opposite your partner of after 18 months of being in their present company constantly, you'd like to look at something else for a change, I guess.
Or divorce.
Or divorce.
You either divorced or married, one or the other.
Exactly.
In saying that, us two obviously come as a pair, as are you. So how have you split up the roles, I guess?
Philip is the boss. Is that it?
Sinead is front of house. She is charm extraordinaire.
No,
charm. I'd say charm. Sinead says chanter. And I'm back of house. My thing is food
and a genius.
And I love people, but
I don't like dealing with them. Sorry.
food doesn't necessarily answer back.
So Philippa is definitely the kitchen is her forte, hands down. Like, you know, there's no doubt about it. The business wouldn't be where it is. It's not for her flair and taste buds and all of that kind of stuff. It's fantastic. So that's, people do come back. And yes, I may be front of house and run around like mad woman, but I enjoy it. So I think we both work very well.
We play to our strengths.
Yeah, and we're very opposite. So it's quite interesting to see from even from my point of view, looking at the two of us in action, we're very, very different. So it's great. So the roles don't really cross much.
So it's very much a yin and yang kind of situation with the two of you, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So it's great. So I can think I know everything, but I really don't.
I am the exact same. How eerie is that?
loving it.
And have either of you any training or, I guess,
experience in the industry? Give us a little bit about, I guess, your backstories before the sea hair.
Philippa.
I have no formal training. I just like to feed people. And I am endlessly curious about food, and I always have been. I suppose before I lived down here. I've lived down here permanently for the last 5 years, and have been coming here for the last 20 years or so. But before I moved back down, before I moved here, I worked with my sister in a little cafe up in Lara. Called Glendalough Green, and I suppose I cut my baby teeth with my sister Clodagh. She still runs the cafe up in Lara, but there's no formal training on my part.
And I guess as a I don't want to say untrained, because I think that's a weird thing, but without that formal experience, obviously then a very talented home cook. And we spotted when we're looking at and chatting with you just before coming on, you have a beautiful collection of cookbooks there behind you. Is there any that you take, any cooks or any books in particular that inspire you most?
Oh, now you're asking a question. yeah, all of them. One of my favorite things is our cookbook. And I would have quite a broad collection. I'll go with current favorite at the moment. Current favorite is are a couple of things. Falestine,
which is
by Tara Wigley and Sami Tamami. And also there's a new book called Herb by Mark Giancano.
Oh yeah.
Those two are lovely. I'm just looking up on the cookbooks at the moment to see the books that I'm because I suppose I buy lots of cookbooks and I read them like novels, and then kind of put them down and then go back to them and cook from them. There's a lot of Central Asian foods that I'm really interested in at the moment. Red Sands by Caroline Eaton.
Mm-hmm. I said to her husband this morning, when I was talking to Tom and I was leaving, I was grabbing a couple of cookbooks. I said, it's a good thing she doesn't buy shoes.
cookbooks are far, in my humble opinion, are far more lovable than shoes. They never wear out. If you get oil on them, it's not the worst thing in the world. It's actually a sign of love, really. So in terms of then, I guess one of the other things that you are very well known for in the Irish food scene in particular is something that came on the scene around, was it December, November, December kind of time? Your tamarind sauce that you started to sell into retail?
Yeah.
How did that come about as an idea or as a concept to make into a product?
That was born out of the cafe. I came across a kind of a series of sauces that we adapted, and it became the tamarind sauce. And that was used with a lot of the lunches we served, the different types of lunches we served. And we got a great response out of from people in the cafe. And Sinead being Sinead, saying, come on, let's make a sauce out of it. So we did, and the response has been extraordinary.
Yeah,
it's been fantastic.
We put a few jars out, just Connemara Hamper in Clifton, where our first, and Ernie's in Galway, and O'Sullivan's in Ochterar. Those were very happy to take without any questions. That's really no question, and I couldn't believe how easy and how generous and how kind people were. We did a couple of hundred just for Christmas time, and they were out the door, and then we stopped in January.
We wanted to see also what would happen with it,
and with lockdown and everything, we just sort of took a few weeks off. And then February we kicked off, and we've done several batches since, and it's now in about 80 shops, nearly 100 shops around the country at the moment.
That is something to really sit back and reflect on. Yeah. That in, you know, what month are we in? June now. To get at retail opportunities like that so quickly off the back of, as you say, this is really nice, let's give it a go and see how it goes. That is some feat.
It's everywhere.
Yeah, you should be really, really...
Well, now, you also have to remember that Sinead can sell iced Eskimos.
Well,
yes, true. Or a cake to to anyone like us.
What's it like? You'll like it, don't worry about it.
Exactly.
it's great with this and it's great with that. But I think COVID has been a blessing for our business. You know, the idea of our business and where hospitality is and food is, I think we're in a very, very privileged position. Yes, I know that we have a good product and we have something different, but people are much more curious, I suppose, being locked up, but it's helped. Social media is a godsend. And the likes of Jenny Glasgow and Reuben have been another, you know, gem for us.
Let's talk about them for a few moments.
I was about to mention the lovely Gastro Gays as well.
We'll come to them too in a few moments' time. Yeah, but Jenny Glasgow and Reuben Diaz, who appeared on Chew the Fat a couple of seasons ago, formerly of the Eastern Seaboard here in Drogheda, now are very much pop-up pros and nomadic geniuses where culinary things are concerned. You have a connection with them upcoming during the summer, don't you?
We do.
We did one last year. We had a
pop-up within a pop-up with Jenny and Reuben last year.
Street food style. And we had 100 tickets and they were gone in an hour and a half. It was phenomenal. Right. And I mean, in fairness, it went on late in the evening and, there was a lot of locals interested, which was great. And then, you know, a lot of holidaymakers as well. So it didn't take, it was phenomenal.
This year, Jenny and Reuben are coming back for four nights.
Very exciting.
They're bouncing back and forth with menus, and I can tell you, yum.
Well, everything that they produce is inspired, curated, considered, and absolutely that. In a word, yum.
Give you a little insider. Don't tell anybody now. One of the ideas, and it's an idea, we can't promise it'll happen, but was sort of tempura seaweed. And I thought that was really interesting. That's Jenny, and that's, you know, but that, now we'll see how that goes, but those are the kind of ideas they're coming up with, which is great.
And that is them in style too, but it's that fusion of their creativity, both in styling and in the culinary world, but also the incredible ingredients that are in abundance to you out there. And it's a real fusion of two bits of greatness as far as we can see, really.
We're very privileged, I feel, that they've come on board with us and that we all connect very well and click, and it's all very easy. I know that, you know, I feel the industry has changed so much from when I got into it. I've been born into it and brought up in it. So this is a much nicer way of doing stuff, is coming together with people
and collaborating
in comparison to probably 20 years ago, where no, that's mine, I need to hold on to that, and don't be telling other people, and all of that kind of attitude. Now it's almost like open arms, and it's much nicer.
But also, people who come to eat benefit hugely, because, you know, they get to try things that, you know, they're one-offs, and you probably will never taste that particular thing ever again. You know, and it's special.
On that point, who is your customer, and have they changed over the years? Are they the kind of culinary explorers? Are they families? Are they locals?
It's a real mix of locals, people who are coming to stay on their holidays with families, people who are doing kind of foodie trips along the west coast. It's a complete mix of people.
It's from 4 months to, you know, 104, pretty much. Like, we've had a local lady that's well into her 90s that appears a lot, and then we've had people with, like, yesterday, 2 days ago, we had a 10 day old. Kim and Ronaldo from Misunderstood Hair, and they had a brand new baby. It goes from one extreme to the other. So it doesn't. There is no profile for our clients.
We're in our third summer, and so we don't necessarily have a particular type of people that come to us. All are welcome, and I suppose the food curious. It doesn't matter what age you are,
and the menu is small and simple. It's only four to five. Specials on the weekends, but it's not a huge amount of, you know, chips. There's no chips on it, there's no sandwiches on it, there's no you know.
It's just a celebration of the food that we have here.
Yeah.
And while talking about customers, there was one particular day you had four very special guests
five very special guests.
Well, yes. Because you had, you know, Patrick and I who are fine, that's grand. But you also had some gentleman, I think his name is Michael. Michael?
Yes, I think Michael D. Was it some? I think Russell might have had a bit of a meltdown when he saw him. That little flutter.
It is not like Russell to have a meltdown. Let's just get that on record. Yes, you had a visit. By complete coincidence, we didn't bring him along in the back of the Duke. Well, Michael D. Higgins did dine there, and it was quite a moment for you. How did it feel when you, or explain that moment to you when it's like, you know, hello, I'd like a table.
I think it was he followed on, he was chasing the two boys. That's what was happening. Following you two. He knew you were off with somewhere good. No, I think just from later on, we heard a few bits and pieces. So I believe that Michael D would have spent a bit of time in and around Cleggan over the years, because we had, you know, Richard Murphy, you had Ted Hughes, a few other poets, and you know, Cleggan was the area. Cleggan and Boston were doing quite well with those interesting characters like the Peter O'Toole and all of that over the 70s and 80s. So I am guessing that he might have been there just for old time's sake originally. Now, he did say when they arrived, I saw the three cars drive down. I thought, oh, those cars are going to the ferry. And then the next thing, a security person came and said, you know, we're a private security firm. Would you, could we bring somebody in? And I said, oh, yeah, no problem. Go into the corner there. You'll be fine outside. And they said, no, we want the front seat. So the next thing up comes Michael and Sabina and said hello and sat them down and got them a normal chair rather than the bench chairs. And they were great. They were there with their daughter. She was heading or coming from Boston, I'm not too sure. And then yourselves were there and all the other people. And everybody left him alone. He was so, they were all so relaxed. And the security was relaxed. It was lovely. And then, I went into Philippa and I said, Philippa, I called her out of the kitchen. I said, don't react now, but the president is here. And Philippa goes,
president of what?
a minor detail.
Specifics.
I did ask, and he said, yes, he had heard about it. You know, he'd heard about the place, and that was it. But I'd say he was picking up his daughter.
It was wonderful to have him.
They were in the area and they came in for coffee, cake, and a bit of lunch. And there was nothing to it. And that's being honest. It was very relaxed. Yeah. It was very easy. Your area where you were sitting was much busier. And I mean, people didn't even realize he was there until he was pretty much leaving. And then one or two people got up to ask, could they get a photograph? And he came back. Like, you couldn't. Both himself and Sabina were really lovely. And then the crew around were lovely. So, and off they went. And that was it. There was no fuss until after they were gone, really. And then you two gentlemen were just the highlight of the day, absolutely, after that.
We'll send it a check in the post for that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
How amazing and how rare an experience that is.
It is. Took us a while, I suppose, September, October, when we sort of realized.
Actually, yeah.
You know, when you're in it, we're all on automatic pilot, and that's it.
Yeah, and I guess your focus is, in terms of the hospitality end of things, is like, yeah, great, you're the president of, yeah, fine, whatever, but you're a customer, and table four are running low on their drinks, and I need to run to them, so toodaloo now.
Yeah. That's pretty much it, yeah. And, you know, you like to have a sense of humour on the store. It's a very relaxed, we've got a lovely team behind us now, we've got
a good team. Really year now, it's really nice, and
they've come to us. We've been very privileged that we haven't had to hunt for staff.
We're very lucky because I understand throughout Ireland it is actually quite hard to find people, but we've got a great crew this year. There's a couple of people in the kitchen with me this year, which is wonderful, and Sinead has a lovely team out front.
Hold them dear this year, because they will be very well appreciated by the hordes of people who will be visiting you throughout the coming months, because it is very much a destination. But you know, we're talking through this, we were talking about how this started off as the idea was a food truck progressing to taking up a bar that was in the town and occupying that and popping up essentially in it. Has the prospect of permanency ever come into your minds?
Well, that's a work in progress. We leave it at that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
It's a work in progress because, you know, realistically, we've been in business. The first season was 4 months. Last year was just under 9 weeks. This year, we're in COVID. You know, we need to see the lay of the land. And that's, you know, we're lucky to have what we have. And yes,
we'd like to have our own permanent spot. Okay. At the moment, we're lucky to be where we are, and
we're enjoying what we have without the stress of, you know, being permanent and you know, having the noose around your neck and all of that kind of stuff for the moment. So yeah, time will tell. But Connemara will be where we are, I think.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. Clegan, and we love the area. That's the whole idea.
And are there any other exciting products up your sleeve to come in the future?
Yes. Well, Philippa, what's the answer to that?
I say yes to everything.
My first response, no. And then they talked me around.
And so, yes. The answer to everything is yes. Yes, yes,
yes. Yes. Something. I mean, yes, there will be other, there are other plans afoot. We might have a little project. I'm being very vague, I'm sorry, but we might have a little project in coming out in the autumn.
Okay.
After the tea hair the cafe is finished.
Okay.
So just for anyone who may not be able to drop along to Clegg during the summer because one reason or another, but they do see the tamarind sauce in their local shops or around on their travels, what do you recommend it is used for? I can tell you for us, we love it on ham. We're obsessed with it on ham.
On a cheese sliced ham.
Or on a cheese board with the ham. It's fantastic. But for yourselves, from your infinite wisdom of the product, what would you suggest?
We have used it on lots of things. Most recently, for me, poached eggs with a rasher on some brown bread and some tamarind sauce on the top. Oh, yum. And also, I recently marinated some lamb shanks with the tamarind sauce. And that was... slow cook them, and it was delicious as well.
And duck as well. You did it with, just sear the duck breast on a pan, and then.
And also, if you're a vegetarian or a vegan, I mean, the sauce is vegan. It is also fantastic with vegetables. Either if you just have roasty veg and put a spoonful on the top of the roasty veg, it just adds another layer, which is lovely.
That I'm
so
drilling into
in
the microphone.
Essence, the answer is everything.
Everything. Everything. Yeah.
Philippa did on the weekend on Monday bao buns with
mushrooms and aubergine and the tamarind sauce. On the menu in the cafe. And they were yummy. It was lovely.
We're going to have to come down right now. Sorry, if you could just hold two for us for this evening, we'll be on our way. Philippa and Sinead, thank you so, so much for your time today to talk to us on Chew the Fat. And best of luck with absolutely everything throughout the summer in Cleggan. Thank you both.
Thank you very much.
I love the two of them.
So infectious. They're and so I cannot infectious. Wait to get over to Cleggan again at some point throughout the rest of this year if I can't get them over to our part of Ireland sooner.
I know. That was one of those interviews we wish was able to... Well, firstly, we had to do it via a phone line, which is a change for us, but we wish we could do it in person because they're just so much fun. But the only problem with doing that would be, I think, this episode would be about 8 hours long because they chat. They're great chatters.
They would keep you hooked until the last second, though.
If you do want to see any more details about them and the pop-ups, especially the Jenny Glasgow and Reuven Diaz one that's popping up in July, go to thecehair.ie. And if you want to help with the Kickstarter campaign for the Bartender Collective, they are at thebartendercollective.com. But that's it for this week.
That's it for another week. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode. If you are interested in supporting this independent production, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/chewthefat.
And that's just a little token of thank you if you do wish to do so. Another thing you can do if you do like this podcast is subscribe and ensure that it is in your app, whatever it is you use, every single week. Just hit subscribe and you can rate and review it there as well. Tell your friends, tell your mothers, tell your fathers, tell your children to listen to Chew the Fat every single week. But that is it for another week, and do keep in mind the notice board as well. We are at hiya@gastrogaze.com if you'd like to include anything in that. But from Patrick and from myself, thank you so much for listening, and see you next week.